welcome the incredible Jen. So awesome to have you here. There's so many things I want to talk to you about today. And where do we even start? I'm going to start with a big question. You're the chair of NAHWIC. It's a huge role. It's a lot to take on in addition to everything else that you do. Why did you say yes to being the chair of the National Association of Women in Construction?
Felicity, hello. I always love having a good chin wag with you. NAHWIC chair role. It was an interesting decision because at the same time I had recently been made redundant and looking at myself in the construction industry, let alone potentially being geared up to be the chair of the National Association for Women in Construction. And I was in a real quandary because part of the advocacy is always retention of people in the industry. And I was, should I be in this industry? Should I be leading this association that, you know, all those questions were like just right in the middle of the decision to be the leader of that association. And I had to really break down the why and what NAHWIC had provided me in the past several years. And that is ground base level connection, leadership skills that I would not have got in my workspace. And incidentally, my NAHWIC network supported me through the redundancy, connection, his job potential, speak to this person. You know how these connections go. So in a critical period of my career, I should be leading this, especially if I'm a perfect example of retention.
Absolutely. I find it personally challenging making that. It's always that public commitment, I think, and what shows up for me is, you know, that love of the industry, but also the challenge, the opportunity of it all. And recently I moved back to Queensland and some of the events I started to attend were the NAHWIC ones. And it was amazing having been away for 7 years, walking back into the room, that connection, like you said, and that warmth and the happiness and energy. And it was so refreshing to be in that part of community and be that genuine connection, even though I hadn't participated in such a long time. So it absolutely, I think, such an important support network for so many people, both men and women in our industry. How do you think about tackling some of these challenges that we do have? And I know one of the stats around women in construction dropped from 13% to 12%. There's so many initiatives happening, challenge, opportunity. How do you see it? It's a big question. What can we do?
It is. And I took on the role at the AGM at the end of last year, and the next day was representing NAHWIC in Parliament and talking to ministers and shadows, because we are Switzerland and I love speaking to both ends. And that stat had in that week come out and I was almost like ropeable. Come on. But a good prompter for discussion. So in these, you know, as part of the Australian Construction Industry Forum, NAHWIC has this seat at the table to get to these, you know, decision makers at that government level. And I said, they were not aware of that statistic from ABS, and almost gobsmacked that there had been a recedence in that statistic. And I just went, you know, I feel like a cracked record. What are we going to do about it? What can you do about it? We've got, as you know, Felicity, there's papers up the razoo that have researched this, that have got fantastic suggestions for what can be done, like those quick wins and those long-term cultural shifts as well. And overlaying this with, we can do some easy things and deliver the, you know, the 51% of your population, if recruited or retained, can deliver the pipeline for the government. And I think the element, you know, the NAWIC network that we're, you know, that we are constantly in, are the converted people, are the ones that are driving. So we've got to expand our discussion and our awareness throughout the industry, just moving outside the circle, getting larger, and talking to those, you know, the federal, the state, to get traction.
Mm,
because I know we love our NAWIC network, but in essence, we are talking to the converted there.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And you do get those excited people coming in the room because they're passionate about it. And that's a really great question, I think, and to ask ourselves is, International Women's Day is tomorrow at the time of this recording, mm-hmm. the 8th of March. And it's a great reminder to say who's not in the room, who are those people who are the fence sitters, the detractors. And I am shocked when I say to people, do you know there's only a, I think the number's just gone up to 14% engineers that are women, and people go, no, I didn't know. Or I'm giving a presentation and I hear someone say, is this still a problem? And I have to contain myself when I get that response. The answer is yes, it is still a challenge, but maybe you're listening to this podcast and that there's some things that you've had. Well, awesome, first of all, for listening to this podcast, and I hope that we can shine some light on it. But that's a great point, is who can we bring along this International Women's Day that needs to have this conversation? And totally agree, there are some quick wins, and we've just done some research on looking at what are those simple things that we can design into our systems that we can create change, not just, oh, let's get people to change their behaviors or do some training, because that's a hard, long process and often really ineffective. And some of the things that we've seen, something simple like performance reviews, get this, Jen, I'm not sure if you heard the stat, but
love a good stat.
In male-dominated professions, men are most likely to get a 10 out of 10 score and women are most likely to get an 8 out of 10 score. And the simple change to shift on performance reviews is make the scoring out of 6 rather than 10, because it interrupts our bias. Now, that's something that everyone can just implement straight away, right?
Absolutely. See these little things? Little gems like that.
Exactly. It's the diversity by design that, and as you know, construction engineering professionals, it's something that we do every single day. And I think shifting that mindset into how can we tackle the diversity challenge from that perspective, I think can be really valuable. What have you seen work well, Jen?
Well, clearly not much. Clearly not much. What I have seen not work well might be a point, is where a large organisation has implemented criteria for recruitment to be 50% female, and that the manager or the HR person has to present a why if that is not achieved. And the whole organisation, that would typically have a lot of engineers, could not physically get 50% application. And then, which is statistically driven, but then when the one female is actually recruited and appointed, the organisation, you know, on the ground, in the lunchroom, is saying, you were recruited because you are a woman, yep, regardless of capability. So there's the bookends of it, of that recruitment process.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen
and
that.
I think you can, feel that the visual is an easy one, and I think there's been a good shift in just a photo of in that recruitment of that company in the industry to have a female in that all of their media is a big help.
Yeah, it's such simple things, and it was another study talked about at even at Harvard. They had photos of men on the walls as you walk through the corridors, and that was something that they changed, and it made a positive difference. Just literally having the people on the walls just not all be men. And I mean, I think some of these things we just it's the stuff you walk past every day that you just become sometimes I think so used to it because it's the everyday. I remember I left a job and I was the only woman in the team. This was only a few years ago, and there was 14 people in the design team, and we had sometimes had some ad hoc women come in and present their piece on, say, the traffic part or structures. And when I resigned from that job, I had several men say to me, "Oh, now that you're leaving, there are going to be no women in our meetings." And I thought, "You've just thought of that? Fascinating. That's so interesting."
Wow,
So
hello.
it's interesting how it becomes so, and yeah, I'm not saying that to have a go at the men or anything like that, but it's interesting how it just becomes so every day, and you just kind of, it becomes the water that you swim in.
And you know what's really nice? To be in a meeting where it is diverse, where there is varied opinions, because you ultimately know, well, I know in my job that I get a better decision. I wanted to ask you, Felicity, if you have in your the recent gathering of research, if you had come across the phrase that unconscious bias is actually conscious bias.
Ooh, I haven't heard it expressed that way, but that was a big finding in the research that one, the unconscious bias training doesn't work if you're just saying to people, be less biased, and it in fact can have
Yeah.
the opposite effect, which is scary. And Malcolm Gladwell has a podcast on this, which is fascinating. He even interviews Julia Gillard about it, where they call it the moral license, which is also fascinating to go, oh, well, now you've been nice to a woman or a person of color, then tick, you've ticked that box, but it actually can have people swing the other way because I feel like I have a moral license now. And an example of that also is people saying that they've been given a healthy vitamin to eat and it has them smoke more and eat bad food because they feel like they're eating
I'll
healthy.
have a Diet Coke with my ice cream.
That's right, exactly. You got it. And yeah, so I think the unconscious bias is such a huge part of it. And it makes sense because as humans, it's efficient. And as an engineer, I love the efficiency, but it actually can, yeah, be a big challenge too. How's it come up for you in terms of that phrasing? Unconscious is con.
It was at another at a Narwick event years ago, and we had Wajir representative speaking, and she brought it up. And at that very point in time, I was sitting next to my boss, who is an exact replication of me. We work the same. We almost had the same fuzzy hair. The same bad humor and definitely the same MO in project management. So I thought this is actually our conscious bias of working together. She recruited me in a mirror. Like, I know that Jenny is going to do it this way.
And it's super
We
common, and I've
incidentally
seen it.
look the same.
And actually, one of the researchers who is from Harvard, she talked about how I think she was a synchronized swimmer when she was at school, and she said that she interviewed someone for a role and they were also a synchronized swimmer when they're at school. And she said, oh, it has absolutely nothing to do with being a Harvard researcher. But she noticed that she was then really connected more, thinking like, this person's great. We should definitely give them a job. And she had to check herself and go, hang on a second. These two things are completely unrelated.
I love the there is a lovely piece of research in regards to CEOs. It was actually it was a UQ, University of Queensland research paper. The professor was looking at why there were less females in the CEO role. And so he selected, let's say, 60 CEOs, half of which were females. And the one thing the males had in common were they were had all in their formative years. So this fellow went right back to what happened as you grew up. They were all the captain of their football team. And the women had all had a significant, potentially traumatic experience in their formative years that made them, you know, it could have been a family breakup or the like in their formative years that had, that was the common factor for the females as opposed to the males being the, you know, the sports captain.
So fascinating. I thought,
you know, and that, you know, speaking to the having to overcome something or indeed overprove yourself to constantly be on the, I'm not good enough yet, I'm going to keep going. And
it's so tricky. And I think this is, you've nailed it there, Jen, with the challenge that we face is often cultural. There's lots of stereotypes. And I think for women, it can be tricky. And this notion of a double bind comes to mind, where if you be a leader in, say, a male context, then it can be, you can be sort of punished because you're going outside of your gender stereotype. And I've certainly had that feedback of be more assertive, which, how, that's not me.
Really?
And so it's kind of like, yeah, you can't, I know, right? That was my mentor gave me that feedback of, here's how you can develop yourself as a leader, Felicity, is to be more assertive. And so you kind of stuck because you go, well, I can't lead like a man. If I lead like a woman, then that goes against, you know, other stereotypes. So you can kind of get stuck, and it can go all the way back to those early experiences of how you talk to children. And there's so many intervention points along the way in both male and female careers in getting into leadership. Do you think, what advice would you have for leaders, for people in our organizations who are wanting to foster and nurture that next generation of leaders? What advice would you have for them?
Do it.
Do it. Do it. Stop talking. Go take action.
Specifically, if I look in the consulting world, it's difficult to allocate the time to that junior. If you are a part of a SME, it's even harder because you're basically, you know, around the clock just delivering, and you don't have a HR team, a corporate function team to support that new person or that mid-career person to move up and understand what that means. So that's why associations like NAWIC are important, to be that buffer, and also programs like yourself in regards to We Aspire to deliver those connections where your company is not providing that for you. And I would say specifically for in terms of, you know, the gender side of things, potentially we would prefer the comfort of other females. Even though we talk about, you know, having all voices, cognitive diversity within that group still needs to then be important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You just reminded me, we had an advisory meeting for We Aspire the other week, and we had, there was five of us on the call, and we all had a completely different opinion about something, and it was around the Wajir gender pay side of things. And one of the people on the call, she said, isn't this interesting? We're all wanting to achieve the same mission around developing the next generation of leaders, but we all have a different opinion. And the way she said it was so disarming, where it was more like an observation. And she said, isn't this great? We've got this discussion and we've got all these differences in the room. And we do have person of color, gender split on our advisory committee, which is great, and different industries as well. And it was, because I was thinking, oh my gosh, people are disagreeing, this is going to be bad, what do advisors think? Oh no. But how she framed it was so, I feel like, embracing that opportunity of difference. So of course, you know, talk about diversity and inclusion, but I think that really showed, you can just say something simple like that to go, oh, what a great observation. And it made me feel a lot safer in that space and encourage the discussion, encourage the different pieces of thought. And we didn't agree at the end. We went, okay, great. That's some really helpful insights. Thank you. Thank you for providing them.
And as long the point is for the as an example that the WGEA program of making everyone aware of those pay gaps is to actually start that discussion.
Start the conversation.
Whatever it might be, just to, well, oh, holy smokes, how are we actually going to do some change?
Agreed. And that's been a really interesting part of the conversation I've had over the last couple of weeks is that a lot of people are saying, here's where we are, but here's where we've come from. We've actually improved it by 5, 10%, which I think is part of the story to say it is a snapshot in time. What's this journey look like? Are we progressing towards that? And it's so challenging. Every industry is facing it in some regard, and even ones that are dominated by women.
That's right. And generically, we're saying it's for that particular topic, it's name and change, not name and shame.
I
So
love
that
that.
it's more of a everyone, it's okay. This is a starting point, and it's a good starting point. It's actually a starting point.
I love that.
Yeah.
Name and change. I've written
Name
that
and
down.
change.
Good. So good, Jen. My last question for you is, we started the conversation around you were on your first day as the chair in these government meetings. I think that's actually perfect that stat came out at that time. What an
It
opportunity.
was a lovely timing.
What a great time. If you had a bit of a magic wand and you had those conversations again, say at the end of being chair or in a year or two's time, what would you love to be talking to them about? What would be, a win for you to go have that new conversation? And yeah, a bit of magic wand. We can sprinkle a bit of fairy dust on this one. Doesn't have to be, actually achievable.
Oh, the dream. Well, in our recent strategy, national strategy, we were talking about what would be the end game. What would, because we have this big 25 by 25 and, 25% by 25. How can you make that happen? Oh my God, now we're going to have to change it to 2030, et cetera. So the dream is to, with these government bodies, with our industry, is to not necessarily, well, make NAHWIC redundant.
Awesome.
But we will never be redundant because we are connectors. We are human beings and we love to connect. So holistically, if I was to go back, and I will, at the end of the year or throughout the year, the conversation is going to be, like with all feasibilities, what if we don't do it? What if we don't change this?
The do
And
nothing
that's
option.
more the point. There's legal ramifications. There's more, suicides in our industry. There's still sexual harassment of these higher stats. Those pay gaps, these are legal ramifications. So what if we don't do it? And that's exactly what we're doing at the moment. We're not doing nothing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's a great
Yeah.
question to ponder. What if we don't do it? And what if we hadn't been doing this work for the last 10, 20, 30 plus years? Where would we be without each person, each volunteer putting their hand up?
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll come up, another worldwide issue will happen like COVID. Numbers will increase again. And the time before that, when females' participation was at its peak, was in World War. So that was the last time that our stats were great. So we don't want to be at a point where it's like we have to have another like catastrophe to be, accepted into the industry, Enough's enough. No more stuffing around. That's where I'm at. That my conversations are very much enough's enough. Like, it's action time,
It's time.
because we're at this. We're just on an absolute plateau. which statistically would say it'd be a 100 years or the like for that 30% shift. 30%, you know, when a critical mass actually makes a cultural change.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're not going to be taking 100 years.
So good. I love that. A call to arms. Thank you, Jen. You're
Oh,
inspiring as always. I love hearing from you, and thanks for everything that you're doing within Narwik and championing the effort. And yeah, we so appreciate you and thank you for all the things that you do, seen and unseen. It's a thankless job being a leader, I think, a lot of the time. So thank you. And thank you for sharing your ideas in this conversation today.
my pleasure. Thank you, Felicity, and we spoke.